Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Labor organizations accuse business leaders of intensifying what they call a brutal and coward retrenchment of workers amid calls for President Mugabe to intervene to stop massive job cuts.
Yesterday we had over 800 people, and today we are receiving more reports that termination is intensifying. I think the situation is going ahead unabated as we speak.
The widow of Patrick Nabanyama, who disappeared more than 15 years ago after being allegedly kidnapped by suspected war veterans, says she's worried about the disappearance of activist Itai Dzamara.
And 16 vendors who were arrested last week following clashes with municipal police in Harare today appealed to the court's ruling denying them bail, arguing they will not interfere with witnesses.
Because of lack of alternative sources of livelihood, the vendors continue to flock back into the city. So every day you have a situation whereby the vendors are back in the street.
These stories and much, much, much more coming up.
Labor organizations are accusing business leaders of intensifying what they call a brutal and coward retrenchment of workers amid calls for President Robert Mugabe to intervene to stop massive job cuts that have seen nearly 900 workers being laid off since Friday. The job cuts follow a Supreme Court ruling 5 days ago that employers' contracts can be terminated after a 3-month notice without offering any retrenchment package. Business leaders, though, are accusing the workers of exaggerating the figures to force government to change the Labor Act. But Labor Minister Priska Mfumira says the judgment has opened floodgates for employers to terminate workers' contracts.
Yesterday, some government ministers and labor leaders agreed to request Mr. Mugabe to evoke his presidential powers to stop the massive retrenchment. Mr. Mugabe returned to Harare this morning from Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, where he chaired an African Union conference on Ebola. Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union Secretary General Japhet Moyo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the situation is worsening for labor.
Workers are being terminated as of today. Yesterday we had over 800 people. And today we are receiving more reports that termination is intensifying, as you're saying it. I think the situation is going ahead unabated as we speak. Very unfortunate, really.
We understand that some workers have been coming to your offices. What are they telling you?
They are showing us the letters they were given by the employers and told that they should not be reporting for duty. They'll be able to collect their dues up to the end of October. So they are not given even 3 months cash. They've been told to go home, and then they will be able to be told when to collect their cash in bits and pieces.
But business leaders are saying, Mr. Moyo, they are struggling and they have excess workers, and this is why they've resorted to retrenching some of them.
No, this is not a retrenchment, really. This is merely laying off people without money. The labor laws in this country do allow for social justice to take place at the workplace.
That was Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union Secretary General Japhet Moyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Responding, Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce President David Norupiri tells a Blessing that he has not received any reports of massive retrenchments.
I have not yet heard of cases of that nature, which I can confirm that that's the official position. But what I know, of course, there was a judgment which was done and which was passed in favor of the employer. That was a court case which was heard. But of late, the numbers which you are being told, I don't have those figures officially. To me, it may sound very, very unusual because it's something which we may say is really something which cannot be done within a very short space of time like that.
But what is the way forward? Are you talking with government and labor about this issue? Because it appears labor is panicking.
It's not only that issue. Yes, the government is actually in the process of revisiting the whole Labor Act. Government and business, they are actually in the process of doing that. So it's not really an issue which we can say it has driven the panic in industry, because the Labor Act was actually being revisited. And the talks are going on between government and business on as far as the Labor Act is concerned. Yes, business has been crying all along to say, look, it's unfair. The Labor Act is actually in favor of the employee, and the government opened the discussion, and those discussions have been going on.
That was Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce President David Norupiri speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
In Harare, Public Service and Labor Minister Priska Mfumira told Parliament today that government is talking to its tripartite negotiating forum or TNF partners over the Supreme Court ruling. Mfumira noted that the Attorney General is studying the judgment. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from the capital.
Responding to questions from lawmakers in a weekly question time session in Zimbabwe's National Assembly, Mfumira said government is worried about the ruling that has so far seen more than 700 workers thrown out of employment since its delivery last Friday. Kwazana East lawmaker Nelson Chamisa was the first to question Mfumira about the Supreme Court judgment. Mfumira said government is talking with its TNF partners with a view to come up with a position that is favorable to all parties. Mfumira added that government was in the process of amending labor laws in the country.
We want a win-win situation. When we are talking about tripartism, it's equality. Know that one is a master of the other one. The judgment is being reviewed by the Attorney General and the other legal departments within government, and we will come up with a position shortly.
But as Mfumira was in the National Assembly, the Zimbabwe Labor Center condemned the ruling, said it had provided an opportunity for employers to get rid of workers. Center Board Director and University of Zimbabwe Law Lecturer Munyaradzi Gwisai told journalists that the judgment is a big blow to workers.
It does away with the entire core of labor law that has been built in this country since 1980, what was called the Employment Act number. But the ultimate real solution is that the working class cannot expect their deliverance from farmer judges. The working class cannot expect their deliverance from autocratic dictatorships that have rigged and stolen elections for the last 35 years.
He added the judgment had opened gates for workers to be hired on cheap labor and to be dismissed cheaply. He further said permanent employment was no longer guaranteed in Zimbabwe. Though the center called on President Robert Mugabe to intervene, Gwisai said there is need for finding more solutions to this labor crisis.
Liberation and emancipation for the working class is an act of self-liberation.
The judgment by the Supreme Court was delivered after two former Zoa Petroleum managers, Don Nyamande and Kingston Donga, challenged the termination of their contracts by their employer. Apart from the indigenization law, investors have over the years complained about the country's labor laws, saying they overly protect employees. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Patricia Nabanyama, the widow of Patrick Nabanyama, who disappeared more than 15 years ago after being allegedly kidnapped by suspected war veterans, says she's worried about the disappearance of activist Itai Dzamara. Dzamara has been missing for more than 4 months. Nabanyama said the alleged abduction of Dzamara brought back sad memories and reminded her and her family that people's safety and security is not guaranteed in Zimbabwe. She said since the abduction of her husband, who was an election agent for former Education Minister David Coulthard when the MDC was still united in 2000, her family has been living in abject poverty. Nabanyama was allegedly abducted at his home in Bulawayo Senkeda suburb in 2000 in similar circumstances like political activist Zamara of Occupy Africa Unity Square, who was allegedly snatched from a barbershop in Harare's Glenview suburb.
The 16 vendors who were arrested last week following clashes with municipal police in Harare today appealed against yesterday's court ruling denying them bail, arguing they will not interfere with witnesses. The Harare Magistrates Court had argued that the vendors, who are members of the National Vendors Union Zimbabwe, will incite their counterparts to resist moving from the city center to designated vending sites. Meanwhile, director of the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, Promise Nkwananzi, tells reporter Standikile Mhlanga the vendors are still fighting running battles with the municipal police in the city center as they continue to resist moving to sites which they say are unsuitable for vending.
The state and the local government continue to evict the vendors using force, but because of lack of alternative sources of livelihood, the vendors continue to flock back into the city center. So every day you have a situation whereby the vendors are back in the street.
How are the vendors reacting to this, and has the local authority given you any update of their intentions?
They have not given us any update. What we know is that there are contradictions within council as to how to go about this issue. If you talk to the mayor and the council leaders, the elected leaders, they have a completely different view from what has been done by the secretariat, which is taking instructions from elsewhere other than from their employers. The vendors themselves are peacefully resisting this unjustified eviction by returning to their stores and continuing to sell their wares, awaiting for government to really review this position and come up with vending sites which are located at strategic areas in terms of the market. The world over, you see vending even in the CBD. It only depends on how you zone it properly so that you also balance between the sources of livelihood of these poor people and the cleanliness of the city.
That was Promise Mkwananzi, director of the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, on the line with Studio 7, Standikile Mhlanga from Harare.
Leading Zimbabwean novelist and poet Chenjerai Hove, who died in Norway recently at the age of 59 of liver failure, will be buried in Sanyati on Saturday. Hove, who was living in exile since 2001, is an icon of modern Zimbabwean literature. His death has devastated his family and many in the arts world who have been mourning his unexpected death some 2 weeks ago. Family spokesman Ray Mawerera tells Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira preparations to give Hove a great send-off in Zimbabwe are progressing quite well.
We are expecting the body to arrive in Harare tomorrow, Thursday evening. Thereafter, there shall be a short service on the next day before he departs for the rural home, which is in Sanyati. We expect them to have burial on Saturday morning, early in the morning on Saturday, or mid-morning on Saturday. But so far, that's the arrangement that's framed up.
What of his wife and his family? How are they holding up?
With difficulty, these things are never easy. What she's grateful for was that she was at least by his bedside when he passed on. So that kind of made things much easier for her to accept.
In terms of the arts industry in itself, how has the community, or even the Zimbabwean community in general, been mourning, you know, one of their gallant sons following his death?
There has been an outpouring of grief, Sandra. You can see that he was somebody that was highly respected, not only as a prolific writer, but also as a people person, because he was a very charming man. He was loved by a lot of people, by almost everybody in the arts, and especially those students that studied his texts. And so there's been a lot of media attention on his passing and a lot of sadness that is coming through the media.
That was Ray Mawerera speaking on behalf of the Hove family from Harare. He spoke with Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's media fraternity is mourning the death of Sam Mnyavi, another prolific writer who died at the weekend in the United Kingdom following a stroke. Mnyavi, popularly known as Baba Bruce, following his popular column in the Sunday Mail and Parade magazine that he published for years, was now living in the UK after retiring.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, Zimbabwean Christians attending a World Church Conference in USA say they can help in transforming Zimbabwe.
We are all here from different walks of life, from different languages and cultures, seeking one thing, seeking to learn how to walk with God.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras met with bankers today as lawmakers began another emergency debate on a second package of judicial and banking reforms needed to secure crucial bailout funds from Europe. Greek banks reopened Monday for the first time in 3 weeks, but capital controls remain in place.
Police in northern Afghanistan say a suicide bomber in Alma district of the Faryab province today detonated a vehicle packed with explosives in a crowded marketplace, killing 19 people and wounding more than 35 others.
4 years after his passport was seized by Beijing authorities, 75-year-old Chinese dissident artist Ai Weiwei has gotten it back.
A long-time Al-Qaeda operative was killed in a U.S. airstrike in early July while traveling near Samada, Syria, the Pentagon says.
And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says a regional joint task force to fight the militant group Boko Haram will be up and running by the end of this month.
You are listening to Studio 7, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington.
Hundreds of people drawn from at least 57 countries, including Zimbabwe, are attending the 16th Assembly of the Mennonite World Conference in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, USA, which started yesterday and ends Saturday. About 200 followers of the Brethren in Christ Church from various branches in Zimbabwe are attending the event, which is held every 6 years. The theme of this year's conference is Walking with God. Such conferences have been held in Zimbabwe, Paraguay, Calcutta, and Canada. The Mennonite World Conference is an international community of Anabaptist-related churches representing Christian denominations rooted in the 16th century radical reformation in Europe. Members include Mennonites and Brethren in Christ followers, with 1.3 million baptized believers from Africa, Asia, Latin America, Europe, and North America.
Mennonites, who have established a reputation of being very strict followers of non-violence, are engaged in various activities like tackling poverty, HIV, and related issues. Zimbabweans attending the conference say they hope to continue spreading the word of God back home in communities ravaged by serious social, economic, and political problems. For perspective on the role of the church in transforming Zimbabwe, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks with Pastor Ron Moyo of the Whitestone Mennonite Church, Kansas, Ohio, who's attending the conference.
We are all here from different walks of life, from different
languages and cultures, seeking one thing, seeking to learn how to walk with God.
Do you think that maybe Zimbabweans will leave that conference with something that will empower others back home?
One of the ways in which that is going to happen is all of us, like they say, that life is a journey. We are in a journey of knowing, we are in a journey of discovering. And here, when you come to interact with somebody who does not speak your language, but you have intentions and goals that are the same, it really, really becomes a very fascinating dance. So we are learning to dance with our brothers and sisters, with our own differences, cultural differences and backgrounds, but moving forward.
Now, looking at religion and politics, usually I know that ministers of religion like you always want to avoid some of these topics, but we know that there is something that ministers of religion can do to actually transform Zimbabwe. What is that which can be done by people like you to change Zimbabwe?
The Bible reminds us what the Lord requires from us. And it says it requires us to do justice and walk humbly with God. As long as all of us can walk with humility with our brothers and sisters, with our fellow countrymen, as long as we are all aiming at justice, and justice is very broad, and we practice justice every day in our own homes, with our children, with our parents, there is a level of justice. But that level of justice differs when you look at the country as a whole. So if all the leaders would do justice, and justice boils back to the golden rule, do unto others as you would like them do unto you. Mm-hmm. Once we are all conscious of that, then I think things might change. It changes us first. It changes the way we look at others. And if others would respond the same, I think it will be a sweet walk together.
What is the starting point if that has to happen?
The starting point is you. You can never in this world change somebody else unless you change yourself first. So leaders, those that are called into leadership, they have to understand what they are called to, because it's not just an easy thing. You don't lead yourself, you lead people. The first thing to change is you. When you are in that position, you are not there to satisfy your own self ends. You die into yourself, you lose yourself, and you are there as a servant. That is what Jesus did. Jesus came to be a servant, and he is a servant leader. And unless we are all servant leaders, then we will never achieve that. In our culture, it is there. Inkosi ngabantu, umuntu umuntu ngabantu. Meaning, you have to be humble. You have to submit to what the people need. Then that way, your leadership will be fed in a multifaceted way, not only by your own opinions, but by the opinions of everyone. And then everyone has a stake. You would have challenged the nation to participate in the leadership. And if everybody is in the leadership, then what is there to complain about? We are all doing well because we are meeting all of our needs as a people.
Naturally, we know that politics and religion clash. So if ever you try to engage politicians, they will feel sort of like being challenged. So how do you, drip your way through using the word of God?
Politics and religion do not clash in a way. But we, the people, clash because we come into the game with wrong motives. Political leaders are leaders that are there to serve the people. That is why they are put into the office by the vote of the people. Be there, be present, be available, be reachable, be accessible.
That was Pastor Ron Moyo of the Whitestone Mennonite Church, Kansas Ohio, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, right here in the USA.
And 19 young Zimbabweans entrepreneurs are set to leave the country to join thousands others who have been selected to participate in a three-day global entrepreneurship summit to be hosted by President Barack Obama in Kenya starting Friday. The selected locals met with the American ambassador to Zimbabwe, Bruce Wharton, in Harare today for debriefing. One of those selected, Tawanda Chikosi, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye the group is excited to go and tell the Zimbabwe story despite depressing and challenging economic conditions back home.
Collectively as a group, we are hoping to ensure the outside world that is convening at the entrepreneurship summit that Zimbabwe has what it takes. We also have the brain power and we also have the human capital to compete at a global scale.
What are some of the issues that you'd like to see addressed as young Zimbabwean entrepreneurs when you do meet other entrepreneurs from all over the world at this global economic summit in Kenya?
We have two things that stood out as we're having our briefing and our discussion as a group before we left. The first one is we have a case study where technology hub or a hub, an entrepreneurial hub in Kenya, has received funding from the government as a way of the government supporting the entrepreneurial ecosystem that is being pioneered by some individuals within Kenya. So we are actually going to visit that after we land as a group to go and see and take notes from our Kenyan counterparts to say, how did you manage to sell the idea to the government to the point that the government got involved in the technology hub? Well, when we take a look back home, we see that most of the technology hub, if not all of them, are funded by international organizations and foreign embassies and not our own government. So we want to get to a place where we feel government is a very instrumental player in the development of the startup ecosystem in the country.
That was Tawanda Chikosi, a young Zimbabwean entrepreneur, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye from Harare.
In a related development, two Zimbabweans, Bernard Bebe and Tlengisiwe Jiane of the Zimbabwe United Nations Association, are currently attending human rights workshops in Geneva, Switzerland. The two who are representing Zimbabwe are among other country representatives undergoing training on UN structures and human rights instruments under the theme, So You Want to Be the Next High Commissioner. Reporter Tatenda Kumbo speaks to Bernard Bebe about what is going on.
Basically, we are having presentations from various special representatives to the UN, UN from various countries that are telling us positions on their human rights position of their respective countries. And we're also having presentations from other fellow youth that we're having here in the training from countries like USA, Sweden, Denmark. In Africa, we have Ghana, Togo, Kenya, and Zimbabwe also there. So I can say all continents are covered here. And basically, we are exchanging ideas and experiences in terms of, in as far as human rights issues are concerned.
What have been some of the key takeaways throughout this training session?
The issue of human rights, I have seen that is affecting most countries, but currently the issue that is on debate is the issue of LGBT, the issue of lesbians and gays' rights, as there is a clash of religion.
That was Bernard Bebe of the Zimbabwe United Nations Association speaking with Studio 7 Tatenda Kumbo from Geneva, Switzerland.
Please do stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about the labor crisis in Zimbabwe as 500 workers lose jobs in just 4 days following a Supreme Court ruling allowing such contract terminations.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Labor organizations accuse business leaders of intensifying what they call a brutal and coward retrenchment of workers amid calls for President Robert Mugabe to intervene to stop massive job cuts.
The widow of Patrick Nabanyama, who disappeared more than 15 years ago after being allegedly kidnapped by suspected war veterans, says she's worried about the disappearance of activist Itai Dzamara.
And 16 vendors who were arrested last week following clashes with municipal police in Harare today appealed against yesterday's court ruling denying them bail, arguing they will not interfere with witnesses.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
Now please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Tandekle Mhlanga. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.